Today on the Profitable Tradie Podcast.
Money issues are one of the biggest causes of interpersonal breakdown.
Yeah, what most couples fight about. Yep. It's the stuff that keeps you up at 3 o'clock.
Cash is like oxygen for your business. Without cash, your business is going to wither and die, and you're going to find it hard to pay your bills, pay your staff, and basically just feel good about what you're doing.
Is it going to come in, or is it not?
I'm sure they're good for it.
I'm sure.
I don't want to be a pain. I don't want to be a nag.
Tune into today's episode where we unpack the 3 pillars of cash flow and how to make sure that you don't end up with the cash flow symptom that could sink you.
Please don't do that.
No.
Like, please don't do that. That is your money.
The old automated email.
Where does that go?
That goes straight to the junk.
This stuff is hard work, and there's a lot to do to run a really effective business, but it absolutely doesn't need to be all on you, and it shouldn't.
This is a lot of work. It's me, and I've got 7 guys in the field, and it's just me in the office. What would you say to that, Cam?
I'd say you need some help, man.
You're listening to the Profitable Tradie Podcast, where every week we help you make more money, get your time back, and make life and business a whole lot more fun. Join us as we transform your plumbing, electrical, or similar service business into a successful operation. Don't miss a beat. Hit the follow button. Let's get started.
Hey, hey, welcome to the podcast. I'm your host today, Phil Smith. We do not have Tony with us in the studio today. We've got an upgrade today. We've got Cam Hill. He's our head of coaching. Very, very experienced guy. Coached thousands of businesses. So I'm sure it's going to be a ripper. What's up, Cam?
What's up, Philly Bowl? Good to see you. Nice to be in the studio.
Yeah, nice to have
you. Awesome to hang out.
Yeah. I'm excited to chat. Face across the mics.
Yeah, baby. It's better. Dude. There's more hair on this head too.
Oh, damn. Bit of a slight there. I love that. All right. Good way to start. Hey, so today we're talking about cash flow, or specifically making sure that your business has enough money in the bank to pay its bills and leave some, you know, at the end for you as the owner, which I think is the whole reason we get into business, right? Like, we don't want to be doing this for nothing. That's not the point. And, you know, having cash to pay your bills as they fall due is critical to the success of your business. Some businesses can be profitable, maybe even have a good margin, you know, they're making sale price, but they still go under if the flow of cash through their business isn't right. And I think one of the biggest things that's misunderstood is that when we talk about cash flow, we often say we have a cash flow problem, but the reality is you can't. You can only have a cash flow symptom. It's a symptom of other problems in your business, and that's what we're going to unpack. So got a little bit of a story for us today.
Awesome. Juicy.
Yeah, so this one actually goes back to my primary school days. So I was about 7 or 8. We're playing soccer down on the field. Not really my game. I wasn't much good at it. I was hiding in the goal, you know, as you do.
You're good with your hands, not your feet, aren't you?
Yeah, that's it, mate. That's it. You know me. Anyway, we're playing soccer, and there's this guy called Scott, a friend of mine, and he's running along. He was a great soccer player, and it looked like he stubbed his toe. You know, he kicked his toe into the ground. He starts screaming, and everyone thinks, well, you know, he's stubbed his toe. He'll probably get over it. And then we see the blood, and we're like, oh, damn, Scott's in a bad way. We come over, and Scott's broken his toe. Compound fracture. The bones come through the skin. It was pretty gnarly. Pretty awesome thing to see when you're 7 or 8. But I remember Scott pushed the bone back inside, which was pretty horrific to watch as well. But anyway, the point of the story is, imagine that's you. Imagine you've broken your toe or anything. Bones come out of your skin. It's all very scary. You get to the doctor and they go, wow, look at that cut. And they put a big fat plaster on it, or maybe stitch it up, and then tell you you're on your way. They fix the cut. They see what's in front of them. Obviously, the problem with that is you still have a broken bone in there, and then that needs fixing. That's the real problem. The cut is actually just something that you can see externally. And so I tell this story basically to make the point that cash flow is a bit like that. The thing that you see is a cash flow issue, but the real issue is actually what caused that cash flow symptom. You know, it's going to sit below that. And so today, you know, looking forward to unpacking this with you, Cam, because I think there's really 3 big issues that sit underneath a cash flow problem.
Yeah, for sure.
Which are the real things that we need to solve.
So the first one is workflow. If you don't have enough work, you don't have enough revenue, that's obviously going to lead to no profit, and you won't have the cash coming through. At the end of the day, the cash comes in, the cash goes out, or you're just paying your guys to stand around, or you're paying for your expenses that are sitting in your OPEX without the revenue to cover all of that. The second one is your margin. So your job profitability is mainly what we're looking at. So whether it's your pricing, and we'll dig into that soon, whether it's your efficiency on site and you guys are blowing out the jobs, or whether it's how well utilized your team, how much your clients are paying for the team's time rather than you, your margins are going to be affected positively or negatively based on that. And the third one is your collection. So when you do the work, it's your money. Right, and if you're not doing a good job of collecting that, no wonder you have no cash in your bank account. And cash is king, right? It's the fluid of gods. So we need to make sure that we're doing everything we can which there's lots to do that you have to do to make sure that you're collecting your money that you've earned to be able to put in your bank account. So yeah. It should be there.
Absolutely. So we got three big pillars. Obviously, workflow. If you don't have workflow, then no money's coming in. Money's still going out. Cannot accumulate cash. We've got margin. So if your margin's no good, then money comes in. All that money goes straight back out. You cannot accumulate cash. Or collection, which means that it looks like money's coming in. And it looks like there should be some left at the end. But the problem is that money did not actually come in yet. It's not actually in your bank account, which then, you know, we'll simulate the problem with workflow, but it actually is that you've got the workflow, you're just not collecting the cash for it. But any one of those three issues, you cannot actually accumulate cash because there's nothing to accumulate. And, you know, then there's obviously the deadly Bermuda Triangle where maybe you've got all three, in which case we'll talk about that as well. And I think like some of the big issues is if you can't actually get down to it and figure out what these problems are, firstly is you just waste a huge amount of time juggling who and what to pay. So, you know, I've got no money. I've got all these bills I need to pay. Who am I going to pay? When am I going to pay them? How am I going to pay them? And, you know, that gets really, really stressful. Not to mention people can get a bit annoyed with you, which is not ideal. Next one is, you know, you can create a huge amount of stress for yourself as you deal with, you know, creditor demands and feelings of failing in your business. You know, like cash flow is stressful. It's a real tax.
Yeah, it's the stuff that keeps you up at 3 o'clock. And I've talked to countless people that have been up at night not sleeping, and it really pulls into everything that where you show up in life and business, right?
Yeah, and hard on your personal relationships too. Like, I've never met many people that are struggling with that cash flow symptom that are having a great time at home. It tends to be, you know, money issues are one of the biggest causes of you know, interpersonal breakdown, especially in romantic relationships.
Yeah, what most couples fight about.
Yeah, exactly. So pretty tough. I think another big problem you run into is it damages your business reputation. So, you know, if you can't pay your bills, people get annoyed with you. People don't want to be your creditors anymore. Basically, everything starts being stressful. It can damage your reputation, the way you deal with people as well, the way you deal with your staff. But basically, everything starts to look bad when you have no cash. And then lastly is obviously you can go broke. I mean, like, it's a very real problem here is if you have no cash, eventually, you know, the buck stops, you know, the music stops, the party's over, and you're left standing there with your pants down, which is not ideal. But, you know, you can go broke and you can lose everything, which is really where this can end up. Whereas on the other hand, if we can nail this, if we can figure out, you know, which one of these problems, or maybe multiple, am I actually struggling with, you know, workflow, margin, collection, and if I can fix those, I've got some really big upsides. Like, number one, you pay your bills on time. I mean, that just feels good. And again, nobody's getting mad at you. You're not feeling that pressure, that stress. You feel proud about it as well. You know, you're like, hey, I'm never behind on bills. I pay on time. Like, that becomes part of your identity, and I think you can feel really proud about that. Your energy to focus on growing your business rather than fighting fires. Like, cash is not an issue anymore, and so you can actually just put that energy back into the things you need to do, hiring people, looking for more work, you know, taking on new opportunities. All of these things, you know, can actually get your time and energy again. And last one, I think you just feel really relaxed and confident about your business and your ability as a leader and a business owner, which puts you in a really good spot to, you know, to lead and to be followed and to grow a great team and to take on new clients, you know, because your energy is different. You know, you're a completely different person. Your business begins to thrive. So let's unpack these, man. Let's start with workflow. Like, what do you reckon is the biggest issue that people are going to get, or some of the biggest issues people get that lead to poor workflow?
Yeah, look, there's a bunch of different strategies that work really well. But the thing that I would say, like, most trades businesses suffer the most from is the fact that marketing is one of those things that happens when there's no work. But all marketing has a lag effect of some sort. Some of them are really long and some of them are a bit shorter in terms of strategies that you can implement depending on who you work with. But always be marketing. And that's just not something that a lot of trades business owners that I've come into contact with, which is thousands of them, the mentality is, I don't really want to put myself out there. And when you're not putting yourself out there, whether that be on a marketing side, like putting yourself out on your website, running ads, or, you know, emailing people, whatever that format may be, if you're not doing that, nobody's going to know who you are, how to contact you, and so you won't get calls. It makes a lot of sense. The other side of it is the sales side. Lots of trades business owners want to go and talk and be friendly, but that's not the way to close deals. They'll send a quote, they won't follow up, or if they follow up, they won't make a phone call. they'll take the easy road rather than the effective road.
The old automated email.
Yeah, yeah.
That's not where a follow-up, by the way, guys. that goes straight to the junk. If it comes in the main inbox, it probably doesn't get read. I mean, like, quickest way to another person is straight through the phone. So I think the thing is yeah, two big issues with workflow. Number one is you're not marketing your business. Number two is, honestly, you're not putting the effort into sales that you need to, because it's one thing to have the leads, it's another thing to close them. And yeah, hey, if we dig into one of those, I think one of the biggest issues that we see, I mean, obviously, Cam, you've done a lot of coaching. I mean, literally tens of thousands of coaching calls. I think, like, one thing that I know that we talk about a lot is people's hesitation to market. I think there's a lot of people out there that say, you know what, I don't really need to market. Word of mouth is great. What would you say to that?
I would say, yeah, it's great until it's not. The problem with it is you might be in an okay situation now. You might have been in an okay situation last year. But as soon as somebody's not telling their mate about you, you have no control of that. Like, you really just don't have any sort of influence whether those things are happening. So your finger's not on the pulse. You're not influencing the result at all, and so you can only really put yourself to blame when it comes to the fact that the next week isn't full, or the next month or 3 months isn't full of work like it was today or last year. That's probably the number one thing I would say. Like, that's actually just not marketing.
Yeah,
it's relying on hope, which is not a strategy.
Yeah, and I mean, like, word of mouth can really fill your calendar at times, but it's not a button you can push when times are hard. I think another big issue that we see a lot, Cam, is you know, people, they actually do market their business for a bit and they fill up that calendar and they get really excited and now they're really busy, and so they throw themselves, you know, head and shoulders into actually getting all of that work done now that they're full of jobs.
Yeah.
And then they're so head down, bum up, getting all that work done, you know, for months potentially, that when they come up for air at the end of all of those jobs, they come up for air only to realize that now there's nothing. You know, basically they were so busy doing the work that they weren't trying to generate any more work and not really thinking ahead. So, you know, what would you say to that? How do we think ahead? How do we see these gaps coming?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that's worth noting on that. I think one is you've got to recognize the actual problem that you've encountered when you've marketed well and you've got a bunch of work. It's like, if you have a capacity problem, you need to deal with the capacity problem to continue the growth. The second thing is really what you need to do is actually forecast your work pipeline. Like, you should know at all times how much work you've got in the calendar. And this depends business to business. Like, if you do large construction work and a lot of your projects are a few months at a time or longer, your calendar should be longer that you're looking at in terms of your foresight. So if normally you have 6 months of work booked out, you should always know 6 months, how many hours of my team is actually filled up, and look at that all the time so that if you spot a gap 3 months down the line, you can pull the trigger, close the gap. If you're a service-based business and you've got like a week or two tops booked out, or you're looking at just like lead rates or like, you know, call rates coming in and conversion rates, like looking at those numbers all the time. So really it's about looking at the data and having good information coming in and actually checking that and then taking action off the back of it. So look, it's a couple of things. You need a forward focus and look at information, and then you need to have a bunch of tools in your toolkit of like what things you should be doing around your marketing strategy or sales strategy to fill those gaps in advance so you don't get to the point and panic.
Yeah, 100%. I think the in advance thing is really the key. It's funny how when someone has 6 months worth of work, you know, I would look at that and say, cool, well, I've got 6 months to fill the gaps that are coming up in 6 months.
Yeah.
Better start today. Whereas I think a lot of people would say, hey, I've got 6 months to fill the next 6 months.
And got so 6 months to relax.
So they wait 5.5 months and then go, oh man, panic. Let's quickly try to do some marketing. But obviously that lag's pretty tough. And sometimes, you know, depending on the type of work you do, you might also have quite a long conversion cycle. So, you know, if you're the type of work, maybe you do like solar or, you know, some, you know, renovations, maybe do bathroom renovations. It's not the kind of thing where you get a lead today and you close it tomorrow. It's generally a longer sales cycle. A lot of landscaping projects are going to be the same. You know, bigger jobs, tendering for work. I mean, it takes longer to close. So I think that buffer of time is a bit of a trap, because often we forget the lag that's actually going to happen between, you know, trying to push for work and actually getting it. And so I think that's really important. Now, obviously, we've done a lot of podcasts in the past about, you know, different marketing strategies. So I don't think we get too much into that today. But if we look at the conversion side, What do you reckon are some of the big problems that we get in terms of actually, you know, we've done the marketing, we're being proactive, we're not stopping, but now we've got these leads and we need to convert them. What do you reckon are some of the problems we see there?
Probably the couple of big standouts that show up for me straight away is that lack of follow-up that we talked about before.
Yeah.
And if you pull back from that, really what it is there's no process. People think selling is going and, you know, having a good conversation with somebody, and I'm a friendly guy, I'm quite likable, and so they'll buy off me because, you know, they like me, or they can see that my business has done a bunch of stuff online. But like, you're really still relying on something that isn't a process. And so lots of people that we talk to, like lots of people, have never even thought about creating a sales process. They just show up and try to communicate why they're good. And you need a process. So you need, and this will be different from business to business depending on what type of work you do, like you were talking about before, but you need a process to qualify customers. You need a process to take the first inquiry. You need a process to manage the on-site meeting that you have with the homeowner or the business that you're going to be working with or trying to be working with. And you need a process to follow up, the things to say. And the process is the science. So getting that right with the wording that's there, the structure of your conversations, that's one part of it. The other part is you need to practice.
Oh yeah.
You actually need to do the work to get better at doing this stuff. Like, nobody shows up and is an expert salesperson on day one.
Yeah, that doesn't happen.
No.
Unfortunately, that happens in no area of life as well.
Yeah. And so I think it's about recognizing that you need to have a structure that's consistent, and then practicing that structure to get better and better at it over time. And the benefit of having a process in place is you can go and assess what's working and not working, because there'll be some parts of it that are really good and you're doing a great job with, and there'll be some parts where it really needs some change or some more practice.
I think that's massive, because actually I think a lot of the time people say, hey, I need to get better at sales, or hey, I'm really good at sales. But what does that even mean? You need to define that firstly into, like, what are the actual, you know, behaviors that you're good at. And maybe what are some behaviors that actually would attribute to you being better at sales that maybe you're not so good at? So the more you can unbundle it, the more you can figure out what you're actually doing well. But even from a structural perspective, like when we're talking about the sales process, is once you've got a process with steps, instead of saying, well, my conversion rate is 50%. I mean, I'm assuming if that's all you've said, that you're talking about from the moment you get a lead to the moment it becomes a job is 50%. But what you're actually missing is that there is a conversion rate from each step to the next step. And so even though, you know, step one through to step 10 on the whole might be 50%, you need to figure out, well, you know, from step one to step two, 100% of people get to there, 80% make it to step three, you know, 60% make it to step four, and on and on. And what you're able to do is you're able to figure out, well, where's my biggest drop off? Like, where am I losing most people? Is it between step three and step four? Is it between step seven and step eight? And then you can see, well, cool, the step that triggers the big drop-off, that's the thing that's the problem. And now I can not only focus in on unbundling sales as a skill, but I can, you know, focus in on unbundling my sales process into which step is actually an issue. And then I can focus, because otherwise you could go off and say, I'm going to improve sales, I'm going to go work on my inquiry script, for example. And you might find your inquiry script's actually amazing and it's doing a great job, but you just actually can't deliver a price very well, that kind of thing. So you need to figure out what's the actual issue so that you can get in and solve that issue and move the needle in the biggest way. Find that low hanging fruit. I think that's really crucial. And yeah, follow up, I think, for me, is massive. People just don't do this enough. They don't do it well enough. It's really the key. So look, I think if we can get that, we've got our marketing and sales, we're starting to fix the workflow problem, right? So that's cool. So that's problem number one. Let's talk about margin.
Yeah, cool. So I like to look at margin in three different aspects. So the first aspect to get strong job margins is you've got to price well. So if you don't price well, you lose from the start, and you can't even really claim anything back in the long run, because your team aren't really outpacing your budget most of the time on jobs, right? So if you don't price well, you're shooting yourself in the foot straight away. The second part of margins is the part where you're looking at the team's efficiency to deliver on your price. So that's whether jobs are being done on time to the amount of hours that you've put into their quote or not. And then material usage, subcontractor usage. So just the efficiency overall to be able to deliver the promise that you set based on your own quote. Because you're promising to yourself that you're doing X amount of hours usage of this amount of materials, this amount of subby hours when you deliver that to your customers. And then the third one is this concept called labor utilization. So really what that is the percentage of hours that you pay your team compared to the amount that you bill to clients. So if that's strong, you have margins that are on target. If that's really weak, it's going to pull your gross profit percentage on your profit and loss statement down a lot.
Yeah, well, basically you might be back costing your jobs. And if you consume our content, you probably know what that is at this point, but you might be back costing your jobs and saying, hey, I'm getting 40% on all my work. And then you look at your profit and loss and you're like, why is it 30 there? Like, it's 40 on all my jobs, but it's 30 on my profit and loss. And that's really where labor utilization shows up, because you might be actually getting 40 on every job, but there's so much downtime and stuff around between jobs that you actually then are losing money in between, because you're paying out of your cost of goods, which is, you know, the guy's labor, for hours you pay the guys that they're actually not working. So they're not billable hours. And so, you know, your COGS versus your revenue, which makes your gross profit on jobs, is good. But then those COGS are higher as a percentage on your profit and loss because of the unbillable hours, which brings that GP down. And so, yeah, labor utilization is a big one as well. So basically we got pricing your work for profit. Why do you think people struggle with that?
Look, I think it comes down to a few components. One is lack of confidence, so actually just not backing yourself on the value that you have. The second thing is just not really knowing what a good price is, not knowing where you're, you know, converting well, not knowing what your job performance is, and really it comes down to knowing the numbers. So you're talking about back costing before, which, just to like cut a long story short, back costing is going back and checking your job profitability against what you priced it for. And when you do this, you really need to look at each job, sure, but look at the trends. So on different types of job categories or different types of clients that you work with or different tradesmen sent out to different jobs, like, what are the trends that you're seeing? And then going and look at different margins and different gross profit per hour, which is the return on your team's time, actually looking at that information over the course of a bit of time and figuring out, like, what are your benchmarks, and then looking to move the needle where your low-hanging fruit is, trying to improve one area of the type of work that you do. And if I'm really honest, I reckon about 1-2% of people are actually doing this that come in, which is pretty
scary. Before they start working with us.
Yeah.
Once they start working with us, we get on this pretty quick. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like week one.
Oh, yeah. It's straight away. Yeah. But the fact that there's so many trades business owners out there that have no idea of what their job profitability is, it makes sense that you're not confident how to price.
Yeah.
It really does.
Well, if you're not actually in your numbers, the only thing you have to go off is gut feel and pricing out of your own pocket, really. So when you can see the numbers in black and white, you can see how your jobs are performing, which ones are doing well, which ones are not, what's making you money, what's killing you. It gives you a lot more confidence to put the price up on the stuff that's not actually making any money. And I think, again, when you get into this process, it takes some of the fear away as well, because rather than saying, I'm going to do a price rise on all my jobs, which is scary, when you're actually getting into those numbers, what you can start doing is saying, I'm not going to do a price rise on all my jobs. This type, they're really profitable. They're doing great. Like, leave them. That's sweet. Don't risk my conversion. These are profitable. But this type over here, this sucks. This is eating up all the profit all the good work I'm doing over here. So when you put the price up on that work to make it a profitable margin, you're not really risking anything, because at the moment that stuff's going backwards anyway. So it takes all that risk out, all that fear, because you know you're only risking stuff that sucks anyway. And the alternative would be we'd tell you to just stop doing it. So you might as well price it for profit. You probably still convert, and now that work doesn't suck anymore, and happy days. So
absolutely.
But I think that's obviously super crucial. Obviously, labor utilization, I mean, this is a scheduling thing most of the time. I mean, I think a lot of the time if you're not scheduling efficiently, your labor utilization just can't be good. And then obviously efficiency on site. This is probably a harder one.
It's a big one.
Yeah, it's a big one. It takes a lot more effort. So how would you improve efficiency on site?
There's a few things to look at. I'm going to try and keep this quite high level, because we could probably talk about this for hours.
yeah. We just keep it real high level.
A couple of the big things is if you look at one big part of it, it's probably accountability. And accountability isn't just checking that it's done and then kicking their ass. It's so far from that. Are the expectations actually clear? Like, do the guys know how much time they have to be able to do the job? And so many times the answer is no before people start like getting this stuff like working properly. And it's a really basic thing, But if you set really clear expectations and people know how to win, they actually want to win and they'll try their best to go and achieve that.
Yeah, well, no one wakes up in the morning, looks in the mirror and thinks, can't wait to suck today.
Like, absolutely not.
I mean, they get after it. They want to win. And I think sometimes that lack of drive really comes from, well, I want to win, but I don't know how to win. I don't know what winning looks like. So just go through the motions.
Absolutely. Yeah. The other part of it is actually giving them feedback. So you've got to set the expectations so they know how to win. You've got to have some metrics there that they can see whether they're winning or not winning. And then you've got to work on improving them as well. So you've got to give them feedback. You've got to train them to be better, to be able to actually achieve your expectations. That's a lot of work.
Yeah.
And that's why you want to start with like looking at the data and pricing. But like this stuff has to be worked on. So looking at accountability in general is really important. Like we have a system that we train called the 20, which is a regular feedback, like a one-to-one coaching session that you do with each team member or each direct report employee that you have. And it's opportunity for them to get really clear in terms of their focus to improve and actually smash their goals, you know, achieve jobs on budget. Like this sort of stuff really moves the needle in a fast way.
Yeah.
And you've got to have good systems. You've got to set them up well at the start of the job. Like they need to know what they need in advance, so they're not going to the merchant and buying more gear at every job.
Good handover process, good pre-job checklist.
Yeah.
And then obviously, you know, good QA checklist as well. Make sure that I haven't missed anything. Things have gone well.
Yeah.
Photos are in the job cards, you know, good notes. Basically making sure that I've dotted my I's, crossed my T's, job is done, we shouldn't have to go back.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really important. And if you got those systems, you know, then the accountability really starts to take off as well, because I've got something to hold you accountable to. You know, because those systems obviously, you know, are really important for how to do things right, but that's also really going to strengthen those expectations that you've put in for the accountability. Now I can hold you accountable to those expectations because they're in the system and there's no reason why you shouldn't have been able to do it. Obviously with that as well, you know, in that accountability piece, you've got the training and the check-ins and the feedback. And I think actually living like right before that, you've got buy-in. And I think what I'm getting at with this is if your team don't want to use the systems, they don't see the value in it, they don't understand why you're doing this, they don't see how this is going to benefit them, then the hard part is that when you try to do the accountability, you're going to get a lot of pushback and feelings of micromanagement. Whereas if you've got good buy-in from the team, they're like, yeah, this seems great. I really want to do this. This is going to make a big difference. I can see how this benefits me and the business and everything. That buy-in is there. Then the accountability is not you double-checking them. The accountability is you keeping them on track with the thing they want to do, which is using the system and basically producing a great job. So if you do that, your efficiency can go up. If your efficiency goes up, you know, your margin comes with it. But basically, if we can price for profit, we can, you know, keep the efficiency strong and we can nail our labor utilization, our margin should be strong. And if our margin's strong, then in the frame of cash flow, it means money comes in, some money goes out, but there's some money left at the end because our margin was there. And that money can accumulate into strong cash flow. So if your margin's not there, there's just actually nothing left at the end to accumulate. And, you know, you can't be surprised when cash flows are an issue.
Oh yeah.
So let's finish up with collection, because obviously that's a pretty insidious problem in itself.
Yeah. So look, I'll just call out the big thing that we see all the time when people start with us: send an invoice, and then just wait.
Yeah.
And hope.
Yeah.
Is it going to come in?
Yeah.
Or is it not?
I'm sure they're good for it.
I'm sure.
I don't want to be a pain. I don't want to be a nag.
And like, please don't do that.
No.
Like, please don't do that. That is your money. And the thing is, at the end of the day, is like people are busy, people are living their own lives, and sometimes they forget. And a reminder, a call, not a text, not an email, like actually get them on the phone and talk to these people. Like there's easy, great processes that you can put in place for this so that it happens every time. But like you actually need to make that phone call. And whether that's to an accounts payable team or to a homeowner, like whoever it is, on that due date, if it's not paid, you need to follow up.
With a call.
With a phone call, yeah. And something that we found really successful actually over the course of time, we've tested and tried this, is this thing that we call the customer service follow-up call. And it's actually before the invoice is due. So if you have 7-day payment terms, for example, on day 6 or day 5, actually calling them and asking them if they received the invoice, if they have any questions about it, most of the time that actually gets the invoice paid early.
Yeah.
And people are actually really stoked with that, because one, it's great customer service to check in that they actually, like, you know, the job went through to completion and they got the invoice and
they're happy with the result. Yeah,
happy with the result. And like if they don't have it for any reason, you can fix that problem right now and they can pay.
Yeah, well, I hate when you do an AR call, you're calling up about an overdue debt and someone goes, oh, I didn't get the invoice. And it's like, well, who do you have to blame? Like, I mean, and it could be that it's sitting in their junk. Yeah. You know, that's true. But again, if you'd checked that with them earlier, then you would have confirmed with them that it's not sitting in their junk. You've confirmed with them they do have it. And now that door, that excuse, that door is shut. Like, they can't use that excuse now because it's been confirmed. Like, they will want to live in integrity, and they're not going to be able to pull that one on you because they said to you, they remember saying to you, they have the invoice. So
yeah,
that's just not going to happen. And I think, like, one of the big things with this, like, that I really like that you hit on is it is your money.
Yeah.
Like, you've already paid to do this job. You have paid your money to deliver an amazing outcome for someone else. And so you deserve to be paid for the work that you've done. And actually, like, I think a lot of the time we forget that it's like, it's actually very weird in most situations in life to get what you want and have a problem solved or a service done or receive a product or have anything at all. It's weird to get all the benefit for something before you pay for it. That's actually not normal.
No.
But we make it normal in our businesses, and actually, like, that's not normal. Like, actually, most people are fine with this. It's your money. You deserve to have it.
I'll tell you what, man. If I'm the customer in this situation and I'm prepared to pay to have the leak in my hot water unit fixed, like, I want that problem fixed and I just want to pay today.
Yeah.
And it's weird that when you're on the inverse side, you kind of feel guilty asking for money, but it's ridiculous because most people have that money burning a hole in their pocket and they want it out so they know how much money they have to go and spend on other things.
Well, especially when you're dealing with homeowners, right? Like, they have the money before you start the project. They want to pay you as soon as they possibly can. And then you're like, oh, I'm going to do a really good job by them and give them 14-day payment term. Like, that, you're actually making a hassle at this point. Now, obviously, a little different with businesses because homeowners think in terms of their bank account, businesses think in terms of cash flow. So for them, having 14 days to pay might actually ease their cash flow issues, and having a month to pay, 30th of the next month, whatever, like, is actually something that's more normal to them. But if you're dealing with homeowners, there's really no reason to drag this out. Like, they want to pay now. I think another thing is, if you really think about it, you just got to remind yourself what business you're in. Like, if you're listening to this, you probably own a trades business. You know, you're gonna be a plumber or electrician, tiler, roofer, drain layer, landscaper, whatever. Guess what? You're not a bank.
Mm-hmm.
And if you were, like, then it's cool when they don't pay you because that actually makes you more money in the form of interest. You don't have that, and you're not a bank, and so don't act like one. Yeah, it's like,
that's some great advice, Phil.
You're not loaning money here.
Nope.
And you're not loaning the services that you provide either. Like, this is something you deserve to be paid for. So I think number one thing is actually making sure that you're following up the payments that are due to you. I think, like, it's so simple, but it's number one. What else would help with collection, dude?
Look, there's a couple other things that come to mind. The first one is, if you're doing larger projects, having some sort of, like, progress claims agreed to in advance and actually sending the progress claim for the amount of work that you've completed in whatever period, so like month at an absolute max. If you don't do that, like you just said before, you're paying for your labor, you're paying for materials, and that's a massive cash gap for the money out and money in. You have to have a lot of capital in your business, which just holds you at a lot of risk.
Yeah, and it gets worse when you're growing as well, because unfortunately you're taking on new projects, maybe even bigger projects, you're growing your team, you're actually increasing your expenses faster than you're increasing the rate of collection, and so you can really get into a hole there if you're not front-loading collection. So, I mean, front-loading collection, we work on things like, you know, progress payments, sure, deposits, increasing the size of deposit, decreasing the payment terms so you get paid faster. Any and all of these are going to help you front-load the collection of your payments.
Yeah.
And that's going to really help you get through those cash gaps. And honestly, if you can't do that, it can really make things difficult. On the flip side, you know, if you can't take more upfront, if you can't decrease your payment terms, one thing you can do is manage your outgoings. So what can you do in that respect?
Biggest thing that I'd recommend anybody do is actually forecast your cash flow. So if you're forewarned, you're forearmed, right? Like, I guess that's the biggest thing. If you can see what's going to happen in your cash flow in 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 8 weeks, you can make strong decisions because you've got the information there. Because you know, if you've sent a quote, and you work with other businesses and you're going to get paid on the 20th of the following month, you know when that money's coming in, or at least expect it to, generally does, especially if you've got a good collection process.
Mm.
If you know that and you know when you have to pay your material bills and you know when you have to pay all your wages every week or your subcontractors and everything else, you know what your cash position looks like. And if you're doing this all the time, then you can make better decisions around your spending in general. If you need to cut something, or if you need to, Even honestly, if you need to go and talk to your bank about an overdraft so you don't put yourself in, like, a terrible position, you can do that too. Obviously, that's the last thing, and working on your workflow and your margins and your collection process is going to help avoid that. But if you really need to, like, forecast your cash and know what's going to happen so you can make good decisions.
Yeah, I think that's huge. And if you're hearing all this and you're thinking, damn, like, forecast my cash flow, you know, I've got to make all these extra calls now, I've got to do these follow-ups, this is going to be a lot, I've got to invoice quicker, I've got to make these progress payments, this is a lot of work. It's me and I've got 7 guys in the field and it's just me in the office. What would you say to that, Cam?
I'd say you need some help, man.
Yeah.
this stuff is hard work. And there's a lot to do to run a really effective business, but it absolutely doesn't need to be all on you, and it shouldn't. As your business grows, if you got that example, 7 guys out in the field and you're the only one in the office, you damn sure need some help. And you might even need a bit of help. Like that structure, like it needs an office admin or an office manager, no doubt. You need it way earlier than that, in fact.
Yeah, I mean, if you got up to 7 guys in the field and you don't have an office manager, I got some advice for you.
You're going to slap them on the wrist?
I might slap you on the wrist.
Yeah, you definitely need the help. It would be unreasonable to expect you to do all of that. And if you don't fix that problem of getting some help, like, you won't fix the problem of making the calls or forecasting your cash. And guess what? You won't have great cash flow.
Yeah. Yeah, and then unfortunately you're going to say, well, I can't afford to get any extra capacity. I can't afford office help. My cash flow sucks. And I'm like, yeah, but it sucks because you don't have it. It wouldn't suck if you had that help. I mean, and again, if you're fixing those three, you know, deadly horsemen of cash flow. Now, if your workflow is strong, your margin's great, and you're collecting well, you should always be able to structure your business right. And, you know, because you're actually going to have the right margins that have been collected, so the cash flow is there, you know, you can afford your infrastructure. If you can't, then you still have one of those three problems. It's really that simple. So I think we've touched on some good stuff. Should we land this plane?
Yeah, man, let's do it.
All right, sweet. Well, hey, look, cash flow problems aren't really problems. They are symptoms. So today what we've covered is the three deadly horsemen of cash flow, the three big pillars you need to nail in order to make sure that you do not end up with that cash flow system. So get your workflow strong, get your margins even stronger, and make sure you collect that cash, because after all, it is your money. So thanks heaps for listening. We'll catch you all again next time.
Cheers, man.
Next week on the Profitable Tradie Podcast. Improving and growing your business can be tough. To be better off than you are now, you need to be taking actions you aren't currently taking, which requires learning new things. Tune into today's episode where we cover how to learn in the most effective way so that you can get the results you want from your business.
Congratulations on being part of a select group of savvy business owners who are taking their businesses to the next level. And to help you on your journey, don't forget to check out our show notes for a copy of our free book, The Profitable Tradie, and other valuable resources. Thanks for being a part of this special group, and we'll see you in the next episode of the Profitable Tradie Podcast.